Okay, so you nominate to light the candle and the incense. Then the rest of us can stand while we do the puja. Elsie, come, the two of them. Yeah, sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay. Sadhu, 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 sadhu. Okay, you all can be seated. Never mind, it's okay. Okay. Relax yourself, body and mind, then compose your mind to develop the faith, sadha, then spiritual zeal, virya, then mindfully we shall commence the puja. Arahang sama sambuddho bhagava buddhang bhagavantang abhivademi. Suakato bhagavata dhammo dhammang namassami. Supatipanno bhagavato sakkasangho sanghang namami. Namo atassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo atassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo atassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dhammang saranang gacchami, Sanghang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Buddhang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Dhammang saranang gacchami, Dutiyampi Sanghang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Buddhang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Dhammang saranang gacchami, Tatiyampi Sanghang saranang gacchami, Panatipata Viramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami, Adinadana Viramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami, Kamesu Michachara Viramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami, Musawada Viramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami, Sura Miraya Majapamadatana Viramani Sikkhapadang Samadhiyami. Now we are chanda Padipa Puja, offering of likes. Ganna sarapa ditena dipena tamadang sina tiloka dipang sambuddhang pujayami tamonodang. Ganna sambara yutena dopena hang sugang hina pujaye pujaniyang tang puja bhajana mutamang. Vanna ganda guno petang etang kasuma santatin pujayami monindasa siri pada sarorohe puje me buddhang kasume nanena punnena mattena cha hotu mokhang puppang milayati yata idang me kayo tatayati vinasa bhavang adivase tuno bante paniyang parikapitang anukampang upadaya patikan hatu muttamang adivase tuno bante pale parikapitang anukampang upadaya patikan hatu muttamang adivase tuno bante bojanang parikapitang anukampang upadaya patigan hatu mutamang. Then now let's chant the puja aspiration based on our understanding of the significance of all these puja offerings. Significance of offering of light. May this offering of light to the Buddha bring forth the causes and conditions to illuminate our mind and help arise the needed clarity and understanding to dispel all darkness or ignorance therein. Significance of offering of water. May this offering of pure, clear, cool water lead us to the pure, clear Dhamma that cools and doses off the fires of all defilements within our mind. Significance of offering of incense. May our morality, virtue, and understanding shine forth far and wide, just like the fragrance of this incense which we are offering to the Blessed One, who is perfect in wisdom and virtue. Significance of offering of fruits. May this offering of fruits remind us of the Dana Parami, our generosity, and the fruit of our karma, so that we will diligently strive on with heedfulness to attain the path and fruition soon as possible. Significance of offering of flowers. May this constant offering of flowers to the Blessed One strengthen our faith and constantly remind us of the impermanence of this body, so that we will diligently and sincerely strive on to cultivate Sila, Samadhi and Panya, leading to ultimate liberation, the bond-free Nibbana, making of overall aspiration. By the power of all these merits born of these offerings, may our spiritual faculties of Saddha, Virya, Sati, Samadhi and Panya be further strengthened until they become balas or powers, sharing and transferring merits with all beings. May these merits be shared and transferred to all beings without exception, especially to those who have the condition and affinity to receive them. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Okay, let us pay respect. Triple gem. Badang pajemi. Damang pajemi. Sanghang pajemi. Okay, you all can be seated. Okay, just relax body and mind. Yeah? Then we can have our half an hour meditation. Before I forget, today is the 7th December, 2017. So it's a Thursday class. We are now back to Sui An and Mifong's place. Okay, we will off the light. Then you can straight away develop your meditation. Most of us are here before, so you know how to meditate. You just relax body and mind, silent. Then let whatever thought that arise. Do not resist. Do not suppress. Do not do anything. Just allow it to be. Sooner or later, your mind will settle down and the silence will present itself. Always remember the original state of mind before the heedless thinking conditioned by mental hindrance arise. Your mind state is stillness. Yeah. And that is your true mind, your meditative mind, your true nature. So just relax, silent, and allow it to settle down. Then the tranquility or stillness of mind, which is paucity, will arise. Then your stability can give rise to stable sati or mindfulness. And this mindfulness need to be stabilized. So continue to allow the mindfulness to stabilize. Just relax, silent. If you still need to hold on to your object of meditation, then you can use it as a skillful means to stabilize your mindfulness. Just maintain mindfulness or awareness on the object of meditation until the object of meditation become very subtle, very still, right? No more movement. Yeah. That is the mind about to enter sati. When the mind can be in the state of subtle, relaxed awareness without any movement, means the free mind which is in the meditative state has arisen, then the mind will have the ability to develop the higher, more refined mindfulness. So that type of mind is a very stable meditative mind. Then whatever that arises within your form and mind, your awareness will be able to be aware of it, and you will understand the Buddha Dhamma, the essential Dhamma, everything that the Buddha taught very easily. Yeah. When you meditate, don't try to know. Just relax, silent. Okay, now I let you develop your meditation. Then I will ring the bell after about half an hour. Okay, for those who still wants to meditate, you can continue. For those who have not, slowly, mindfully, come out of meditation. Then we shall proceed to page 6 of the chanting book. We will chant the invocation to the devas. Invocation to the devas. In this universe, in their entirety, let the deities or devas come here. Let them hear the good doctrine or teachings of the kings of sages, which gives heaven and release, Nibbana. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. This is the time to listen to the teaching. Samanta Chakalesu Atra Gacchantu Devata Saddhammam Muni Rajasa Sunantu Sakamokadam Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Dhamma Savanan Kalo Ayang Badanta Namo Atasa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa Namo Atasa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa Namo Atasa Bhagavato Arahato Sama Sambuddhasa Iti Peso Bhagava Arahang Sama Sambuddho Vijja Charana Sampano Sugato Lokavido Anotaro Purisa Dhamma Sarati Satta Deva Manosana Buddho Bhagavati Suakato Bhagavata Dhammo Sanditiko Akaliko Ehipasiko Opanaiko Pachatang Veditabo Venohiti Supatipano Bhagavato Savakasango Ujupatipano Bhagavato Savakasango Miaya Patipanyo Bhagavato Savakasango Samichi Patipanno Bhagavato Savakasango Yadidang Chattari Kani Atta Purisa Pugala Esa Bhagavato Savakasango Ahuneyo Pahuneyo Dakineyo Anjali Karaneyo Nanutarang Punyaketang Lokasati Sadhu Sadhu Sadhu. Okay, let us pay respect to Pujya. Buddhang Pujyami. Dhammang Pujyami. Sanghang Pujyami. You all can be seated. Then just maintain some form of attentiveness. We will continue with our second session, which is reporting on meditation, followed by whatever question you have, Q&A session. Okay. Now we can open up. You can just put up your hand to report your meditation or ask whatever question that is related to the meditation or the teaching. Okay. Where is the other mic? Here. There? Oh, not this one. Oh, then never mind. No need. Maybe you can come forward, use this mic. Anybody? Nobody to report meditation? Or do you have any question? Otherwise, we will have to call upon Sui Han or Mi Feng to share with us their retreat experiences. But Na Long and Cameron, Yeah, come, Sui Han first. You ask me for. yeah. How is it? Yeah. Come. Use the mic. Sui Han first, yeah. Sui Han nearer, come.
The day I arrived, the first thing is I go into my kuti. I was telling relative, I go into my kuti, and the kuti is about this week, this week only. So go in there, emptiness, there's nothing. There's a lot, and there's a lot of ants, black ants, they're everywhere. Actually, there's a system on them. The ants were actually traveling like federal highway from one end to the other end across the land, and then they built the kuti on top of it. So actually, the kuti is in the middle of the like the federal highway. So as a result, the ants will have to travel through the house through the kuti, then only out to the other side. How come so many ants? Cannot. How can I stay here? I'll be here 2 weeks. The mind. After a while, the ants actually, they stay on one side of the kuti and I sleep on the other side of the kuti. So actually we are quite peaceful, we are very harmonious. So we accept each other. And then go inside the toilet. Even more ants. The toilet bowl, full of ants, all black ants. It's like that. They are having an annual general meeting, and I was happened to be there. So many ants. So sad. How am I going to go to the toilet? No choice. It's their home, and I'm just visitors. So I got to go to another toilet, which is 5 minutes away. So, the realization is when there is acceptance, then I'll be okay, I'll be happy, I'll be peaceful. But if not, then I'll just the whole day, I'll be, this ends. How am I going to stay here? How am I going to meditate? How am I going to... And the mind just go, gar, 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 gar. So it took a day or so, and then it settled down, so that was good. So for the rest of the 14 days, I was okay. Didn't quite bother. So even though I sleep there, the ants would just go around the mattress and the other side. Didn't really come and bother. So that's one. Then the second thing is for the 13 days of meditation or so, somehow this one is very special set of conditions. All the 13 days was just a lot of pain in the back, dukkha, dukkha, dukkha. So I said, why is this happening? So in a way, it is good. When you look at the flip side of it, if you don't experience dukkha, you don't know what dukkha is all about, and you don't suffer, then and you enjoy, then you don't get out of it, lah. If you experience so much dukkha, then you say, maybe it's time to really work very hard to get out all this dukkha and hopefully hit sotapan or something. So that was the second portion of the retreat. And the third one is, I think it's a very balanced retreat that they put us through. Standing, walking, sitting. So initially 10 minutes, 10 minutes, 10 minutes. Then after 3 days, they increased to 15, 15, 15. They increased to 20, 20, 20. The tendency is that most retreats, the moment we go and sit. And after that, you get up, then you maybe walk to the toilet, do a little bit of walking, 10, 15 minutes, and come down, sit again. So we don't really get to stand. We don't get to really walk in a equal balance fashion. So I think there's a purpose, so that whether it builds mindfulness or build peace and calm, so that equal portion actually helps, lah. So that was the second one. The third one is they actually make us walk to wherever we need to walk, and we have to walk mindfully in one whole row. So even though we are going to collect our food, also we have got to go and walk half an hour around the lake, collect our food, then walk back, sit down, eat. So everything we have to do quite mindfully. That helps build mindfulness. And some evenings we actually go and walk two rounds the lake, which is about 1 hour walking. So that also kind of helps. The other thing, most of the time we stress very much on the Four Noble Truths, but actually we look at the First Noble Truth, and then we look at the Fourth Noble Truth, which is the Noble Eightfold Path. Actually, we know, but at the same time, we didn't know, because actually we just skip past the second and the third, which is the craving and the way out. So, as we do, take our meal and all that, we contemplate. Before the meal, really contemplate that the food is impermanent, the food is not self, the food, the nature of the food, and all that. Before, and then after we eat it, then we contemplate again. So in a way, it also makes us look at the craving aspect of it, that it's just food. One of the things that Longpo Thongbai said before we left is, if you go back to our car, our house, our family, our good food, then you'll never be enlightened. Something like that, he said. So as long as you cling on to the craving, then it will be quite difficult for us to get where we want to go. So in a way, the letting go of craving will help a lot in our journey towards liberation, letting go. So the second portion, the craving one, is the second noble truth, is just as important as realizing of the dukkha. Okay, so far. Certainly there was a lot of peace and calm. That place is a very, very conducive place for meditation and contemplation. I think most of people benefited from it, and all the 21 of us will be going back. We say, oh, we are going back. And some of them very daring want to go in the open kutia, which is even smaller. Open kutia is about this big. So it's a platform. It's a platform with one wall and three sides canvas, and they say, "Oh, they want to go there." So I said, well, I suffered enough this year, so maybe next year I'm going to enjoy the bungalow and they can go and enjoy the open kuti. But certainly it sets that set of conditions that are very conducive for you to practice. Sorry?
Did you develop any understanding?
Oh, yes, of course. There's a lot of dukkha that we have to get rid of, and we better quickly find our way out of it. Because in our life, we don't really get to experience real dukkha, I mean, especially in our medium-class families. Everything we need, we have. So if you enjoy, it's a bit difficult to be able to truly understand the dukkha that Buddha meant. Until you get sick.
Yeah.
Oh. Of course.
I think let her use the mic for a while. That's not recorded. You explain like a part, that one is very important. Just now you mentioned.
Brad Suyan was talking about the dukkha, like in our daily life. He was saying the medium class don't really suffer a lot, but I look at it differently. Every day, I have a lot of dukkha. You know, I mean, if I say something not right, you know, I feel. There's a lot of contemplation and, you know, a lot of understanding need to be, you know, on the essential Dharma, right?
Okay, we should thank Brad Suyan for the sharing. And just, sadhu. Then just to add a bit, I think what Alicia wanted to ask is, did Brother Suyan develop any understanding from the retreat and all those things? Then Brother Suyan said, yes, a lot of suffering, a lot of dukkha. So what is your understanding after you have learned all this Dhamma? What is your understanding? One aspect is like what Suyan went through. Then he thought this is because too much good life as a middle class. You experience all the good things, you can get almost everything. Then when you go to somewhere where things are not the same, and especially when you go to a retreat, you cannot understand the culture there and why they put you there and what is meditation, then you will have situation like what Suyan go through. To me, it's very simple. If I understand what is meditation, then we can feed it very easily. Dukkha is always from the mind. Physical, it can appear. Circumstances can condition the mind to react and stir. Then you have dukkha. Like he, at one time he mentioned something very relevant. When you can accept, can be at peace, then you feel better. Then when you are out of the kuti, you are not used to this open kuti and all those things, then your mind cannot develop the acceptance, especially the first day when they saw the ants and all those things. So you have to deal with things that you encounter in life. And the way to deal with it is to have understanding, wisdom, nothing else. It's not a question of the thought telling you to let go. Don't want to have craving. We should live more simple life, otherwise we cannot awaken. Maybe people think that way. But as a cultivator, my nature don't think that way. Your good life also have suffering if your mind is not trained. When you are in a situation, especially in line. If you travel or you go to other way place, the conditions are very harsh. It's very different. That's why the Buddha mentioned under the entire reality, the condition suffering. The seventh one, when you cannot get what you want, when things don't go your way, when expectations in life are not met, suffering arises. Then suffering can arise in many ways, like the form, growing old, having accident. But the worst is the mind that is affected by all this. If you have the Dhamma, all this will not arise. Your condition is such, when you are there, condition is like that, things are like that. You have to ask yourself, you got two choices. Be at peace, accord and flow, and develop whatever wholesomeness and understanding you can from whatever situation. And understand clearly why you go there. If it's for a retreat, for spiritual development, then that is your focus. That is your understanding. So you have to go back to the training, because different people understand it differently. You, I have the benefit of hearing from Ingvi first that Sunday. You all heard the recording? Oh, you didn't? Wu Pingjing, sir. Oh, you, after she came back, she attended. Then I asked her. Oh, she described it very well. She can even remember all the retreat conditions, how they go through from first day, second day, everything. Then she even told us, she said it's pretty similar to what Brother Teo teach, except they have their rigidity, their routine and all those things. I said that one is okay, it's common because different place has different tradition and they teach differently. And I was told it's an international group, quite young. Not to say quite young, quite new. Most of them are quite new. So it's not something that they want to develop until like very intensive. They intend to develop a more simple one, a more general one, where most people can fit in and develop. But you don't understand, you don't know what is going on. Then like Ingvi say, a lot of people are not used to this style of meditation schedule. Well, normally when you sit, you got at least half an hour to 45 minutes to 1 hour or something like 2 hours. Then your mind can settle down. So this on first day, like Suyan also mentioned, 10 minutes before you even settle down, you have to stand up. Then you don't know how to contemplate. You don't know how to do the reflection like standing. Then like Suyan said, most of the time you don't stand. Then you also don't know how to do walking. Then you seldom walk. Then of course, if you understand, then it's different. Like we say, the purpose is not to let you develop the attachment to good meditation, so that they flip you on every 10 minutes. Then the other reason is also less suffering for you, less pain. And the third very important reason is, like Ingvi pointed out, is for you to develop the mindfulness continuation from one posture to the next posture. Then if your spiritual faculty is developed, you realize your mindfulness is always there. It will continue from every of this posture. Then the connecting movement of the four posture are very important, the intermittent connecting posture. Yeah. So development of mindfulness can be developed if you understand you just walk mindfully. It means body and mind as one, no need to know. Standing, reflection, just look at nature, close your eye, let the senses develop the sensitivity to experience nature, the vibration within nature, and all the other type of sense impression or data that you can pick up, not only through hearing, the wind, the breeze, the tactile, the weather. Then also, I was told, she said, you were told to walk in a certain way, put your right hand on your tan tian, then walk. Then when you pin the pot, you go for round, so what you're supposed to do it mindfully. Then you walk the leg like in a row, they got certain spacing for you. It seems initially on is about 5 feet, then later on is about 10 feet. Then you have to be mindful, all these things. Then he said on the second last day or what, at first she thought they have all the posture except lying down, she thought don't have. Then on the, according to her second last day or what, I think they asked this, was it Joe to show you all the lying down one, sleeping? Then they who was it that shared with you all? Was it Joe? Oh, okay. Sadhu. That one is very important. Yeah. You must feel comfortable, relaxed. Then don't sleep. Like Suyan just now mentioned, Jeff Oliver also teach people how to lie down, but caution people not to sleep. But when you understand, it is very beautiful. In fact, that is the best posture to meditate. There is no restriction of chi flow. You don't cross your leg. But for those who want to develop energy field concentration, then the sitting posture is more suited to them. But if you want to do the real meditation, lying down is the most relaxed and most conducive posture. But then it depends on the individual, because some people like certain posture. So they have this tendency of doing it in that posture. So if that is the one that is more suited, then they can use it. So it's not a rigid rule. There is no fast, there is no one hard or fast rule about the posture. Like I always say, the posture never defines the meditation. The method, the technique also never defines the meditation. Meditation is to be understood. The Buddha constantly reminded the monk, even before his parinibbana, strive on with heedfulness. So the only thing you need to develop is heedfulness, to be heedful in the midst of life. Where the Buddha said, heedfulness is the path to the deathless. The heedless are as if dead, you don't stand a chance. So if you know your focus is to train your mind to be heedful, then you ask yourself, what is heedfulness? So heedfulness, like what we have gone through, there are two parts to it. Dhammapada verse 23 define it very clearly. It said, the ever mindful, constantly meditative, you hold on to this practice steadfastly, you will realize the supreme bond-free Nibbana. So when you are heedful, you are guaranteed enlightenment. So ever mindful is the key word. Constantly meditative is the second part. So ever mindful, you need to train the mind to be mindful first, then stabilize it to be ever mindful. Then daily mindfulness is the one that can give rise to that first aspect of heedfulness. When your mind is in sati, ever mindful in the midst of life or even in retreat condition, then that is the beginning of meditation. Because without that, you cannot be constantly meditative. To be constantly meditative is to be ever mindful, to cultivate the Noble Eightfold Path. And the most important practice within the Noble Eightfold Path is, of course, the Four Foundations of Mindfulness. That is what meditation is all about. Then you have to connect this Four Foundations of Mindfulness to the first path factor of Noble Eightfold Path, right view. You cannot reflect, contemplate, and develop the ability to understand right view. You cannot develop the meditation. even when you insight into phenomena, you may not understand what all these are, because the universal characteristic does help you, but not everybody can straight away awaken and penetrate the Dhamma, because when the insight happens, you don't have the Dhamma understanding, it may not lead to that type of awakening. It's just a type of happening that just happened. But because you lack mindfulness, you don't know the essential Dhamma, you don't know what constitutes right view, you cannot connect and you cannot link. Then you will link suffering to more of the physical aspect, the life aspect. But suffering actually is in the mind, mental. Without craving, without attachment, there is no suffering. And what is craving? What is attachment? Craving is not to hold, not to grasp, not to cling, not to want things your way. There is craving. So how you live your life? As long as there is no craving, what type of life? There is no problem. But when there is craving, even the good life, there is problem, there is suffering. Like what Alicia experienced, suffering is everywhere. Yes, she experienced and she can see within her own mind state. When she is not happy, she knows. That's the reason why I always give you a very important pointer. Whenever you are not happy, not peaceful, the evil roots are there, craving is there, you already suffer. Understand? You cannot be at peace, you cannot be happy. Don't talk about meditation, forget about it. Because this basic understanding of mind, if you cannot understand, you cannot meditate. You have to meditate with understanding. What is the basis of meditation? It's to develop wisdom, insight. It's not only to experience peace. Most people at retreat, they are trying to seek peace. And there is nothing wrong about seeking peace. It can make you more peaceful and more conducive to meditate, then to develop the awakening, the understanding. And then all this become useful. But you seek peace and attach to it, and every time you cannot get it, you become unhappy. Then you look for it, you try a lot of funny things to get it. Then the thought will start to project and tell you story. Oh, you know, last time, Cameron Highland better, everything is so conducive. I can do very well here. Oh. See? You forgot. In the four foundations of mindfulness, there are three types of clear comprehension. You remember? Three types of clear comprehension. What is the clear comprehension? The first one is what? Huh? What is the first one? Huh? Clear comprehension of what? When you develop the four foundation of mindfulness, you must clearly comprehend all these things. Yeah? Cannot recall. Domain of meditation is one of them. Then? Beneficial and appropriate. Right time, right place, and the people. So, clearly comprehending that the most important time is now. Understand? Time. Then, most important place is the place you are. Where this is a reality. Then the most important people are the people you interact with, have relationship with. You can learn from it, you will benefit. If you can't, your mind will stir, react, and create suffering. So clear comprehension is very important. Then the other one is non-delusion. Then domain of meditation is very important. You can meditate under any condition, any situation, any place. Any posture is understanding what is meditation. When you understand meditation, then you realize life itself is a meditation. Everything can be meditation as long as you are ever mindful, heedful. then you can learn from life, because the Noble Eightfold Path is basically about life. All the eight path factor is to have the understanding of life, leading to all the right view, right thought, right speech, right action, right livelihood, the way you live your life. Then the four right effort to constantly purify, abandon the wrong thought, wrong speech, wrong action, then prevent this unwholesome action, speech and thought from arising. Then the right effort to cultivate the wholesome thought, the virtue, the right speech, and the right action that are still not in you. Then the right effort to constantly refine upon them, perfect them. So when you are there, you have to be mindful of your speech, the way you arise your thought, the way you act and interact. Then how you develop mindfulness to fit into whatever tradition or condition of that place. And then you become very different. Then you are at ease. Like what Amy went through. She was full of joy. Then those who understand, they make full use of whatever condition to experience life. If you go through the tough life, it's no, not to say if you go through tough life, you cannot meditate. Or you go through this type of very tough condition to meditate, then you can become enlightened easily or easier. There is no such guarantee. Those who think that way, maybe they have their own understanding. Because to them, they think to be in society, it is a very dangerous place because craving arises. Then you cannot discipline yourself. So you need a better environment. Initially, yes. Initially, this is useful. But then, finally, after you have developed the stability of mindfulness, you have to come back to life. That's why the Buddha encouraged the establishment of the Sangha community, their Sangha practices of what they call Pindapata. You have to go for alms round. You have to be worthy of offering, worthy of respect, worthy of the four things. Then, as we have chanted under the salutation to the Sangha, Supatipanno Bhagavato Sāvaka Sangho, so of good conduct is the noble disciple of the Buddha. Then you have the other wise conduct, dutiful conduct, and good conduct. So all this, when you understand, you conduct yourself appropriately. You don't try to force yourself to have right conduct, good conduct. No. When the Dhamma arise, you will have those quality. The wisdom is there. You will conduct yourself accordingly. Then you will have this understanding to do your duty, perform your duty. Because this form of mind is subject to karma. It has its responsibility. Otherwise, karmically, you will fall. So these are the important key understanding. So when you have this understanding, wherever you go, you are beautiful. You don't have a problem at all. So this is the aspect I hope Kayamita can develop more understanding to integrate your cultivation with understanding so that in future you will be able to understand all types of practices from all tradition, from all places. So this is the aspect of Dhamma which I always emphasize on. You must meditate with understanding. Means understanding what you do, understanding what is meditation, why are you there, what are you supposed to do to train, and what are the key important things that you have to develop. That's why the last Sunday class, I think, Wu Bingqing Sir, I happened to see Appendix 6, where they were talking about the 31 plane of existence, and Miss Lee took out the Heart Sutra short note, then we checked on something, then we saw Appendix 5, it was in Appendix 5. Then next to it was Appendix 6. That one very good, you should read. That one, yeah, still got time. You still got time, don't worry. I finished this part, then you can report. What is important is that particular appendix, you train your mind. It's about training the mind. How you train the mind. The meditation is all there. So when you understand that, you understand meditation, you'll be very focused. Then I even explain to you what are the characteristics of a trained mind. The one you go and listen, then go and read up on the appendix. If you go for retreat or meditation, you cannot get those mind states that I mentioned. Means you are not meditating. You are wasting your time there. Yeah, these are the mind state that will arise if you have trained them well. It's not only heedful, mindful, it's just aware. You want it to be silent, it will be silent. You want it to contemplate, it will contemplate. You want it to be attentively listening, it will listen. You want it to be mindful, aware, it will just do that. Then there is clarity, there is silence, deep silence within. Then the awareness and the mindfulness is so different. Your mind state are so different. The trained mind is so different. It serves you. It serves you very well. It becomes your good servant. Whatever you want it to do, it will be able to do it for you. Then if you want peace, peace will be there. If you want silence, silence will be there, even in the midst of all those conditions. Then when you reflect on the Dhamma, when you look at nature, the Dhamma keep on arising. You're in that state of sati, you have the spiritual faculty. You can understand spiritual teaching. Then you can learn directly from nature, from life itself, through your contemplation, through your inquiry, through your reflection on all the Buddha Dhamma, the essential Dhamma that the Buddha has taught. But it is during this retreat or condition that you can experience all the essential Dhamma arising within you. Then when you see them within the meditation, you understand, especially when you are silent, completely relaxed and just aware, that a lot of things will happen. Then how your mind settle down, enter stillness, paucity. Then from there, how the senses become very sensitive, fully aware. Then you experience the various manifestation of mindfulness and awareness. Your nature becomes different. Then when you can connect to your true mind, through that silence, you become different. Your meditation becomes different. Okay, so this is the part I want to share then. Now I pass the mic to Mifong. Yeah, Mifong. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Yeah.
Hello. I think I moved the petition. Yeah. Okay. Hello. Okay. This one along retreat is actually very different from all the past retreat I've gone to, because the past are always self-retreat. We do what we want and we see the teacher like once every few days. This is the first international retreat, so we are kind of like guinea pig. They are trying out on us. So actually in the beginning there were some kind of logistic issues that have to be sorted out. And For me personally, it was a very beautiful retreat because it is structure has the advantage of structure. It is structure yet quite relaxing. There are three teachers assigned to us other than Longpo. We see Longpo like once every 3-4 days. And these three teachers kind of take turn to teach us. But we are always with the teachers other than rest time. The first thing that strikes me is what Sister Ingvi has shared. Because we are already used to sitting kind of a longer period. Yeah. And so when we started with 10 minutes and like we're just about to get into a very calm state, a peaceful state, and say, okay, please stand up. But what I was surprised is that in this process, my mindfulness in daily activities just developed in all the postures. Even as I walk back to the kuti and when, and what I notice is that the first few days, this is my mind, my mental state. There is negativity, but the reason is because all our friends typically still kind of take me like a leader. They come to me for things. But it was made very clear that the moment the retreat starts, I'm just one of the yogi because I need to meditate my practice myself. So there was negativity that arises in my mind, and I saw that. I reflected, and then as day goes on, I was able to let that go. And like Brother Teo, you say, accord and flow. Whatever people say, whatever the condition, I was able to just very peacefully, go with the condition and the situation. And just link back to what Longpo say at one of the talk, towards the end. He said that if you want to check if we are progressing, not necessarily check how long you sit. Check if your defilements are getting less. Are you having less anger? Are you having less negativity, less fear? And he didn't use the word negativity, but, all this. And when I hear what Longpo said, I actually felt very happy because typically I don't get very, fantastic state in my meditation, but I noticed I become a lot more peaceful. There were almost really like, no negativity, just accord and flow. We have to walk barefoot, we have to, and it's okay, it's just a condition. And it was beautiful. And there's mosquito or whatever. At peace with it. So it turned out to be a very beautiful experience, and we had no handphone, and that is a good thing as less distraction. And we were originally not supposed to talk, but we still talk. Not like chit chat or gossips, but there are times when some of the friends, they have doubt or they dharma questions. And I can see that, some of us, they go by kuti, they discuss about it and ask Joe in this case or ask Mon and all. That atmosphere actually felt very good, and it got kind of bonded us together like sisters, like brothers. So, closer, and I think some of the friends are really very happy because they have somebody to help them to. So that's where, for example, the lying down meditation was raised. And this thing about holding the hand here, actually initially I felt like a bit clumsy. You hold and it's not used to it. Yeah. But yeah, again, surprisingly, after doing it a while, actually, it felt very, very natural. Once I got, I don't know, but I just feel that it felt actually very natural to later. I don't know about that, but
more,
just that.
More stable. You know why? Because it's the concentration, the chi energy released from there that makes you peaceful.
Also, the posture, I think somehow there's less strain on the shoulder.
Less of this, what they call the problem with your body.
Then
inside there, if you are not used to the condition, you don't understand, your body aches on. You got a lot of problems, you're sleeping on the plank now.
Oh no, we actually have, it's a thin mattress, like this type, so it's not so bad. Then someone got sleeping bag, everybody got sleeping bag up. Xuan's Kuti is Kuti, that's why he said my one is a resort, because I happen to be a bungalow, a kuti that belongs to a famous actor in Thailand. So there is a kitchen, there is a hall. Yeah, so I was in, but still sleeping on the floor. The other thing that the sister and me mentioned is that, for example, we have to walk at a certain distance. I see that is two reasons I can think of. Number one is because they are used to having like 800 participants or what. So they train us to be very orderly, because or else it will be a mess, like who walk first, estimated. But this build up helped me to build up my sati, because I have to be aware. You know, I cannot be thinking, I have to be aware to maintain that. When the teacher said, please stand up, we are taught how to stand up from sitting. We are taught how to take our things. So it's like very orderly, and we need mindfulness to be able to do that. So in a way, just to be in a very systematic, but also that automatically the mindfulness develops. Yeah, and I think that helps. So overall, I think I benefited, and that especially on my daily mindfulness. Now, another thing I just want to share is then we came back and went for a different retreat. We went up Cameron Highland. We actually do almost every night lying down meditation. Ask us to relax and be aware, and then he kind of lift us. So we did that. I brought my yoga mat actually to.
Then you were settled down very fast. Then your mind
becomes
very still.
Yeah, but
also, of course, we have some orchestra going on after.
Oh, sure, sure. Yeah, as long as you are aware,
okay. The thing that I want to share is that in one of the exercise or practice, it was a simulated passing away experience. And I just want to cut it very short. I just want to share my own. Because after that, we have a small group discussion and share each one's experience. Is that it was good for me because there are three consecutive thoughts. The first thought was actually fear in me. But somebody was helping me to and sense that I have fear and told me, Mifeng, let go of the fear. I let it go. The subsequent thought that came about was actually Buddha. And that somehow probably calmed me down. And the last thought was really letting go of this body. And when it's over, the next thought that came in is that it's actually easy to let go. Because I was really, you know, like let it go. And so when I shared this experience, the teacher actually told me, because I was thinking about when I'm going to die, but he actually told me, this process of letting go or passing off happens all the time in your daily life. Remember that. And that is something that hit me too, that the arising and passing away actually happened as I talk. And so I just want to share that experience because it does kind of help me. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, let us rejoice with the good sharing from Mifeng and Suyan. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Just to add on a little bit to what Mifeng was sharing at the end, the death process. That one, if you have developed the sati, the meditation, very easy to die. You don't have to worry about dying. Nothing dies. The craving force dissipates, then the consciousness will go through that process. It will go back to cessation, then the random of consciousness will come out. Yeah. But if you are already with the understanding, then it will go into cessation, parinibbana. You don't die. Then the other thing about the word letting go is you have to be careful. Like I said, your teacher say easy to let go, which is true. As you understand, it's very easy to let go. But the correct term is, when you understand every moment you don't hold, then you don't have to let go. Yeah, I know. Because if every moment you already understand that whenever there is craving, there is condition for continuation of the thought process. That's why the birth and death of thought can never cease. Yeah. And there is the first tooling, avijja paccaya sankhara. As long as there is avijja, avijja is ignorant. Ignorant of what? Ignorant of the Four Noble Truths. Oh, the Four Noble Truths. So this one was what just now Suyan was trying to understand too. It's not easy. So when you don't have the understanding, because Suyan was explaining, he experienced the First Noble Truth. Or a lot of dukkha. But you have to understand, no? The First Noble Truth is not about what they call life is suffering. No? It's not about suffering all the time. No? The First Noble Truth is actually the understanding that this condition that give rise to suffering, the eight condition, is a noble truth. There is the noble truth of dukkha. Noble truth of dukkha is not life is suffering. You have to understand. And dukkha is everywhere. Prevalence of suffering when you don't have the understanding. When you don't have wisdom. When you are deluded. When you have ignorance. Deluded is self-delusion. You attach to the five aggregate of form and mind. And that is the main cause of suffering. Because this five aggregate of form and mind got craving, got desire, got selfishness, got fear, got emotional negativity. That's why when Mifeng went through, because you're supposed to like experience the death process. Then she realized the first thought that arises is the fear of death. Fear of things that are not within the known. Fear of the unknown. Fear of whatever the thought tells you. So this fear, that's why he said, the guy or the teacher who came to know, tell her to let go of fear. So fear can only be relinquished when you understand that fear is not you. You have to understand. Why fear is not you? Because it's a condition arising state. Through avijja, it arises. Without avijja, it doesn't arise. Because this fear is a mind state. Arise and pass away. Then when somebody tells you something and you develop confidence, then it's like you can let go of fear. But it's not letting go of fear. It's the understanding that causes you to have less fear. But that fear will still be around. Fear is not rooted out. Rooted out means you penetrate the four noble truth. Then now I explain the second noble truth. So what is the second noble truth? Second noble truth is got anything to paper to pack the thing. Otherwise this one keep on giving the sound. Any envelope, unused envelope. Yeah. Paper. Or use a few chanting book first. Yeah. Pass me some chanting book. Just put there. Yeah. Take three. The first noble truth is the noble truth of dukkha. Means dukkha is a noble truth. Suffering is a noble truth. There are a condition that can lead to suffering if you don't have the wisdom. That is the first noble truth. That's why the Buddha expounded the first noble truth. He proclaimed the first noble truth. He said, O bhikkhu, birth, old age, sickness, and death can lead to suffering. It's suffering if you don't have the wisdom. Then when you cannot get what you want in life, when your expectations in life are not met, when you are not able to develop acceptance of what is within the reality, then there is this craving to want things your way, which is not allowable by nature, suffering will arise. Then separation from loved one, prized possession, from the things that you hold on to dearly, will also lead to suffering. You don't have the understanding. All these are craving. You want things your way. Then when you are with people whom you don't like also, what you want is not to have people who are in the way you cannot accept them, because they are people whom you don't like. Maybe due to past experiences or encounter. So all this can lead to suffering, the Buddha said. That in short, the Buddha summarized all of suffering is your attachment, clinging, grasping to your five aggregate of five form and mind that I call dukkha. Means the five upadana khandhas, grasping aggregate. So the aggregate that grabs, cling or hold is the cause of suffering. So who grabs what grabs It is craving. In craving, there are three. Kama tanha, craving for sensual experience. Whatever through your sixth sense that you experience, that you cling on to, hold on to, want it repeated, that you prefer. When you cannot get what you want, suffering will arise. But this is your craving. Then the second tie and the third tie is towards the existential side. Craving to be and craving not to be. Both are also craving. Craving to be is you want to become enlightened. You want to become a CEO. You want to become successful. You want to like be remembered and all those things. Then there is this craving to be. And when you establish your ability to achieve what you crave for, let's say be a CEO, be successful in life, then you realize there are other problems that comes with it. And that is not really something that can promise you eternal peace or eternal happiness, because it will still lead to suffering, especially the top post CEO position in a company or in the society, in the corporate world. When you went up and get that hot seat, you realize it's a really hot seat. And there's a lot of politics, a lot of backstabbing and all those things. Then you realize it's not worthwhile to be there. And you're craving not to be. And sometimes people prefer to have suicidal thoughts because they just fed up with life. They cannot cope with life. So here, the cause of suffering is craving, is always the mental. The mind that don't understand, crave, cling. So sometimes in life, even you are very common people, not even wealthy or rich, or sometimes maybe just day to day. So you will think that such people have more need in life. That's why they find it more difficult to live. But it's the other way around. Because they are poor, they are more simple, you realize. And they are more contented with life. They don't have so much idea and craving. We are the city people. Maybe we call it the middle class, the upper class, and those who already make it. They still not contented. They still got craving for more. That's why they have this unending craving to have more, to have more. And Maslow's need theory actually explained that. So when you try to climb the corporate ladder, the career ladder and other things is the same. It's unending. And very few people that can be satisfied, contented, and just call it a day. Yeah. You can do that, of course, you have wisdom. You understand there are more things to life. Life is not just about money, achieving, craving, and all the things. So this cause of suffering, which is craving, which is a mental aspect, is to be understood. When you understand, then you can deal with it. That's why under the second turning, this craving is to be abandoned, yeah, or rooted out. So how do you do this? To do this, you must have mindfulness. You must have mindfulness, sati. Without mindfulness, if you are not aware, you cannot deal with craving. Craving is a desire. It's something that you hold on to. Then when this thing, because it is condition arising, when condition cease to be or condition change, it will change. Like your relationship with your loved ones, especially spouse, or your relationship with your good friend or anything. Based on condition it arises, then based on condition it ceases. Then sometimes it becomes the opposite, become hatred. That's why there is not love. Love got no opposite. There is attachment, craving, clinging, because of certain things. then I love you. But when that thing disappears, that love also follows. Yeah. So most of them are motivated by craving, desire, selfishness, and all those things. But if you are mindful, aware, and you understand what constitutes craving, the three evil root, then this one cannot arise. But when you understand, craving is a cause of suffering. Craving leads to suffering. So you have to develop your own contemplative wisdom and understanding. How can I be free from craving? I don't have to let go. The moment I understand, I'm free. So craving is attachment, wanting things your way. That's why you refer back to the teaching that Buddha always says, see things as they are. See things as they are. What is the meaning? Huh? What is the meaning? Yeah? This one I have taught you all, isn't it? See things as they are means what? They are just the way they are. You understand? Huh? People are just the way they are. Condition within nature, life is just the way they are. So you can accept all this as natural, like what my teacher Ajayendra said. We choose to accept everything as nature. Natural. We have this nature's law. Condition like that, things will be like that. So if I can accept them for what they are, means I can see things as they are. Deluded people do deluded things. Selfish people do selfish things. Then, like I said just now, I told before, when you are there, wherever it is, could be what now long, or last time during the early years, I remember 1988-89, I went to Australia. I told you all, I visited Ajayendra. I tell you, we were having good life here. I was on super skill, all those things, and I got everything. Then when we were there, people asked me, wow, you enjoy your trip or not? I say, I tell you the truth. You will say I'm crazy. That time money was very big, you know. I took my whole family there, you know. It cost me 10,000 ringgit, you know, at that time. And we go there, you know where we stay, you know? Velvet Farm. It was a farm, 520 kilometers outskirts of Sydney. It was during autumn time. It was really cold. At night was minus 6. Then first night we arrived late. We were put into an abandoned bungalow. This bungalow got a fireplace. We don't know how to set up fire. There was no wood, nothing, nobody there. So it was very cold. But luckily we can endure and we understand. Then my wife brought enough warm clothing for my children. So we went through the first night. But because that time my faith was very strong, my siddha, virya, sati, samadhi were very, very stable. Then I understand what I'm doing. I had a lot of joy. Then I know how to relax and silent. I don't feel cold. The Thai Raman that was there, Ajayendra was there. Then I tell you, no proper toilet, no proper kitchen, just farmland. They say got that type of what? What type of insect? Very dangerous one. Scorpion or tick or don't know what, I don't know. Oh, they say you have to be very careful. Sometimes snake also. So a lot of this type of thing, we don't know why we were there. But we were well taken care of. We got Ajayendra, Raymond, Sister Sumitra, they take care of us. So my wife and my children get to stay in the kitchen there where there is a burner. Then I was very lucky because Raymond, they invited me to join his caravan. So he put one extra bed for me, very comfortable bed. But I hardly sleep. That time I was fully aware, whole day aware. That's why that retreat was beautiful. Then a lot of reflection, contemplation, a lot of mindfulness development. Then I was listening to the sharing attentively. Then we did the offering of robe, the pindapanata, everything. Then it was not a retreat. It was a what they call Katina. But we went early, so we were there for a few days. Then the last day is Katina, robe offering. So everything was done with understanding, with joy, with that type of mind that is so different. That's why it's different. So there was no craving at all. We just echo and flow and develop the joy, the understanding, because of the spiritual faculty. Because we really understand what we do. That's why there was so much joy. But for people who don't understand, say, you mad. At home, so comfortable with all the aircon, everything. You go there, miserable, in the middle of nowhere, 520 kilometers. It's the first time I went to Australia, like no man's land. It's really in the midst of big farm. And at night, very cold. Very, very cold. So, when your mind has the understanding, it will be able to fit in. So what I'm trying to explain to you is this craving need mindfulness, need awareness, need understanding. Then when you are aware, you will know. That's how I share all this with you. You got two choices. Complain, become afflicted, miserable. Suffering arises. Cause of suffering is craving, because your mind will compare. Why I so stupid, spend so much money, come all the way, and I didn't know what's like that. Why nobody tell me? All this is not reality. This is the thoughts proliferation, projection, that brings about craving, attachment, clinging, that will cause you to suffer. Then especially when you are in a new environment that you cannot understand, you have to develop the mind that can fit in, echo and flow. That's why all these words are very important. See things as they are, echo and flow. Echo and flow. Then be mindful. Be mindful. Then understand. Understand the essential Dhamma. So when all these are understood, your mind can be free. So you don't have to let go. When you don't cling, when you don't hold, you don't have to let go. Fear will disappear, because you know fear is not you. Fear is a condition arising mind state. So understanding that fear is not you, or the negative emotion is not you, is very important. Understanding that fear and all those negativity of mind state are not you. Not you. It's very important. Then you don't have to do anything. Means you don't try to let go. You don't try to do anything. Because they are not you. They arise because of wrong view. Delusion, avijja. If I have right view, I straighten my view, accept them as they are, see things as they are, and I have two choices. Be at peace with it, echo and flow. Then things will go back to normal. Normalcy. And your normal state of mind before stirring, before the wrong view, the avijja, was already the true mind. Peaceful, stillness, silent. You just relax, silent. Everything will just settle down. Whatever that was conditioned out, like Krishnamurti said, the very flowering of fear or anger is the very ending of that fear or anger. Because it is based on wrong thought, wrong view, energy that surfaces. That's why you lie down, meditate, silent, and let it be. Don't try to know. Whatever arise, let it arise. It will slow down, then it will cease. then you realize the moment it ceases, that is where you have to experience the cessation, which comes to the third noble truth. So third noble truth is the cessation of suffering. And this one is very important. So this one is cessation or dukkha. You can experience that cessation in the here and the now. Sometimes it's a glimpse. Sometimes you really go through nirvana. It is something that you will have the complete understanding. But after that, you are different. So this third noble truth, cessation of dukkha, is to be realized, the Buddha said. You have to go through it. Without going through this, craving cannot end. Because that sakkayaditti, the self-delusion is very strong. The egoic mind is very strong. It cannot cease. It will constantly arise. Because it's egoic. It has its own craving, desire. Because of its craving, sometimes when he cannot understand or he cannot get what he wants, he develops tremendous fear. Fear of what? Fear of the unknown. Fear of dying. Because they think they exist. Fear of getting sick, getting old. Fear of not able to get what he wants. So all this comes from sakkayaditti, self-delusion. That's why all this has to be rooted out. And the only way to do it is, like Sui Yan say, the fourth noble truth, the path that led to the cessation. So this fourth noble truth, that's why he said, what he normally do is, he experienced the first noble truth, then he tried to cultivate the fourth noble truth. The two and three is not there. Yeah, so now I explain how you develop the understanding. That when you understand, it's very easy to realize it. It's not difficult. You don't have to use the thought to say let go. Let go of fear. Why must let go? Fear was never you. You don't have fear. Your nature is beautiful. It has none of all this. These are conditioned mind state. And when you understand that, the whole of meditation is different. You don't have to note, you don't have to do all those thought-based meditation. You don't have to learn to let go. Your mind completely different. When you understand, you're just silent, relaxed, aware. No need to do anything. But the doing is by the thought. Who meditate? Who know? Who want to do all those things? It's the thought. When thought is active, there is no sati. When there is no sati, you cannot see things as they are. You cannot insight into truth. You cannot awaken to the universal characteristic. That's why meditation is about the silent mind. That's the reason why Hui Ning say the first thing you must reach is no thought. If thought is actively meditating, you can forget about meditation because that is thought based. And that one cannot lead to a state of sati or no thought. And you can never be hit full with that type of meditation. So Hui Ning, he realized this, that's why he said, you must realize no thought. That will take you direct to the true mind to meditate. The silent mind. The meditative mind without thought. But human beings cannot understand. They are so used to thought-based meditation. They are so used to teach me how to meditate. And they always believe there is a meditator who is meditating. And what they want is a method and a technique. Or a mantra or a chanting. If you don't know what all these are meant for, you will get yourself entangled. You become gullible. These are skillful means that people who don't have the spiritual faculty need to do to develop the training. They start with thought-based. Then they end up in mindfulness. That is what they're supposed to do. The four foundation of mindfulness start with kaya nupassana. First category, anapanasati. Train your mind to be mindful. All this method and technique is to train the mind to be mindful. Just like anapanasati. That's it. And you don't know that. You gullibly believe that certain type of meditation is vipassana because you got nothing. You got that type of object of meditation than the one that is one-pointedness, absorption, focusing, you say samatha. Then you become attached to all those words, terminology. But both are thought-based, energy field. Then, if you are not clear about all this, you cannot meditate. You become gullible. You can be, like, deceived by what people tell you. Then the best is, they got a lot of story. This person is already enlightened, no? What stage, you know, the arahant, no? What? Then you can't even check. You are not interested in checking because of your craving, your desire. You just want to be there. But good thing is it gives you the faith and the setup. So sometimes the faith help you. But if you have the understanding, you will observe mindfully. Because when you observe mindfully, you will know for yourself the characteristic of a noble one. Do they have those characteristics of a noble one? Of good conduct, of upright conduct, of wise conduct, then of dutiful conduct. Then do they have the Dhamma, which is sandhitiko, akaliko, ehipasiko, opanaiko, pachetang, veditabo. Then does the Dhamma lead to awakening, lead to cessation? Does it has the Noble Eightfold Path? If there is no Noble Eightfold Path, that is not the meditation as taught by the Buddha. Because today, I happened to click on the internet, because Sister S.K. Hong, she is new to Pali language. She is Mahayana. She volunteered to transcribe all the talk that we are that we have gone through, the Six Patriot Platform Sutta. And she did a good job. She was from Singapore. And I also don't know how she come. It seems one day Sister Lee introduced her to me as a relative. This is Sister Hong. After that first lesson, he volunteered to transcribe that talk. Then later she wrote to me, because Sister Lee asked me permission. I said, no problem, give my email. And she wrote, and she told me, I think she must be with the Mahayana, or what, I'm not very sure. She has been cultivating for so long, looking for teachers, I'll say, trying to understand this Six Patriot Sutta. She can't. Not until she attend my class. Then she realized it was taught so differently that even she can start to understand. Then she developed the faith, then she volunteered, and she did all those transcripts. Then that one was the 10th lesson. He finished 10 already, plus the earlier one, I think more than 10 already. But I cannot catch up because too much work. But so far we are at number 4. Then 54 also finished. That one, Puanji translate. So the number 10, there is this mention of Subhadda. You remember Subhadda? Before the Buddha died, Parinibbana. The Parinibbana Sutta. So I forgot the spelling. He put there Subha, highlight. She doesn't know the word, but I know it's Subhadda. So I click on the internet. Then I saw the version, which was the correct version, no? And now I know the whole story. Yeah, I tell you the story. Yeah, enough time. You see, the news spread that the Buddha is going to go into Parinibbana the next morning. So the night before, this Subhadda, he got a doubt. He wants to know whether all these Brahmin teachers and all those things that were very famous and proclaimed that they had developed the enlightenment. At that time, they call it Arahant too. So he seeked permission to see the Buddha because he knew. Then he heard people say the passing away of the Buddha is a very rare one. Because the arising of the Buddha is also very rare, the passing away is also very rare, very important. And you must ask whatever doubt or question you have before his passing. So he went and he requested from Ananda. Ananda at first said, no. The Buddha is so weak, so sick, please let him rest, don't disturb him. Then the Buddha overheard. The Buddha told Ananda to let him in. He said, don't worry, I will explain to him and he will understand. Yeah, the Buddha knew. Subhadra will understand. So Subhadra came in. The whole sutta was very beautiful. I will try to cut and paste, then I send it out for sharing. He asked the Buddha exactly what I told you just now, all this teacher. You know what the Buddha's reply was? He never said no or he never said yes. He said, put the question aside. Now you listen. He said to Subhadra, he said, as long as the Noble Eightfold Path is there, that teaching is there, and being cultivated sincerely, correctly, through right understanding, the world will not be empty of Aryas. He called it the first stage, second stage, third stage, and the fourth stage. He didn't use the word Arya, he used another word, contemplate, of the first order, second order, third order, and fourth order, I think. He is the Arahant. Then the Buddha continued. You know what he said? No? Before his enlightenment underneath the Bodhi tree, he was searching. He went all around, he said. Of all those that you mentioned just now, he said, none of them has this understanding, he said. He dared to say that, no? During that time. Then straight away, Subhadra became enlightened. He thanked the Buddha. Then he knew what to look for. No way for power. That's why whatever meditation you do, if it don't bring you back to the fourth noble truth, which is the noble eightfold path, that is not the meditation as taught by the Buddha. Without noble eightfold path, there will be no enlightenment. Because this noble eightfold path is the whole of the Buddha's understanding, the meditation. This is how you live life. All the noble eightfold path factors, they are related to life. Starting with right view, most important. Without right view, avijja, ignorance will arise. With right view, you can root them out. It will cease. So noble eightfold path is very powerful. You not only become enlightened, the enlightenment must be such that you can live life, you can be a blessing to all. That's why you must have the embodiment of right view leading to right thought, right speech, right action, and right livelihood. Then the four right effort. Then right sati and samadhi. Without all this, you cannot be an enlightenment. That's why the enlightenment in the time of the Buddha is called Arya. Arya are noble ones. That's like the truth that he teach, the essence of his teaching, are called noble truth. Truth that can make you noble one, enlightened one. Noble one means enlightened beings who are very noble in every aspect of life. They not only have wisdom based on right view, they are very noble in the way they conduct themselves, their speech, their action, their thought process, and also the way they live their life. All in accordance with the Noble Eightfold Path right view. Then they constantly purify with the four right effort. Then they also constantly develop the four foundation of mindfulness to be ever mindful. And they cultivate mindfulness until they are heedful. Oh, exactly 10:30. Okay, so we end, huh? Sadhu. So tonight, I think it's a very good session. You can develop the understanding. It will help you. Because I also came to realize now the emphasis should be on cultivation. Because you have enough Dhamma, I tell you. It's all in the transcript. It's all in the notes. You have enough of them. Now it's cultivation. Put it into practice. Pariyati, enough. Now, pati. Don't go and interpret as party and party. You continuously go for Christmas party, then dangerous. But you can have Christmas party mindfully, heedfully, with joy, with understanding. I understand a lot of Kayamita are December babies, including me for my wife. So tonight you want to celebrate happy birthday with me for that. We can go to the, you say open the char kway teow, satay. Yeah. Let us rejoice. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. I would like to wish Mi Fong another belated happy birthday. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to Mi Fong. Happy birthday to you. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. And this can be very wholesome. Then we also should delegate some transform merit or sharing of merits with Susan. I think she will be okay, but she need rest. So I was told by Sian, he tried to contact Danny. Danny said no visit. So I think it's good not to disturb her. Let her rest. She like Joyce last time, not enough rest. So lucky. So last time Joyce also have to forego the Bhutan trip. It was last minute fever and vomit. Then her case also, I think, initially was also quite serious. We had not enough rest. Then when Danny contacted me very early, actually before you all know about it, before I sent out the WhatsApp and before I told Joyce, he called me, he knew that day was Tuesday class. And he texted me, asked me to share merits and do something after the Tuesday class. I said, no problem. I said, we know what to do. Then I called him and asked what happened. Then she told me. But go tetari, I tell you the story. We all recorded, not so nice. But she is beautiful. Yeah? She's a very nice lady, very considerate, full of metta and loving kindness. And she really, really a very sincere Kanyamita. Do a lot of wholesomeness. Had a lot of what they call sincerity, joy, and very, very full of faith. That's why she will be okay. Okay, let us recall to mind all of the wholesomeness that we have developed over the last 2 hours or plus. May these merits accrue to arise the causes and conditions for Sister Susan to recover to good health, so that she will not have any complication caused by her minor stroke. And may she be well and happy. May she have love, have peace, and have joy deep within her heart. Then may she completely have a good mind state to develop the recuperation, the rest, so that he can be discharged from the hospital as soon as possible, so that he can give back his precious life to continue with his wonderful Dhamma Dutta work and cultivation. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu. Then now we will share merit and transfer merit. First, we share with the devas. Akasata cha bhumata deva naga mahindika punyantang anumoditva chirang rakantu loka sasana itavata cha amehi sampadan punya sampadan sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampati siddhiya. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Idang menya tinang hotu sukita hontu nyatayo. Imina punyang kamina mame bala samagamo satang samagamo hotu yava nivana patiya sadhu sadhu sadhu. Okay, so let us pay respect to Lord Buddha, Kone Bodhisattva, and all the worthy ones. Then we end.
Bring it there.
Yeah, okay.
I got it.